With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Thursday, August 17th. Coming up in today's show, a look at the July almond position report and the latest estimates for spring wheat. But first, we start today with Brian German.
The plan for Temperance Flat Dam and Reservoir has officially been submitted to the California Water Commission, but there are still ways to show support for the project. Putting the plan together for the project was a lengthy process of collaboration between multiple different agencies, and there are several other projects competing for the available funding. Executive Director for the San Joaquin Valley Water Infrastructure Authority, Mario Santoyo, offered ways for the public to show their support for the Temperance Flat project.
The thing that we need the most at this time is for the general public that is willing to spend a few minutes drafting a letter to the California Water Commission telling them that they support Temperance Flat as a project that will create value and benefit to our area. If the public generates those type of letters, it will allow the commission to understand that this project's not only needed, but very much so supported.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
USDA cuts yield estimates for durum and other spring wheat. Gary Crawford has more.
We know that the wheat crop in the United States has taken some hits from the dryness in the spring wheat areas.
But the Agriculture Department's chief economist, Rob Johansson, says evidently that hit, as reported in Thursday's USDA crop report, not as severe as many private analysts had expected. USDA taking 2 bushels off its July spring wheat yield forecast, taking it to 38.3 bushels an acre, reducing the spring wheat production forecast by 5% from July's, now to 402 million bushels. Private analysts had expected a larger cut because of the drought in the northern plains. As a result, December wheat futures falling about 4% when the USDA report was issued. Even so, compared to last season for spring wheat,
we're seeing declines of production by about 25%, up to 50% in the durum areas. And we do know that winter wheat is also down in terms of production by 23%. Overall, all wheat production down by about 25% year over year,
which could boost average wheat prices by 91 cents a bushel compared to this past crop year. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Farmer incentives related to conservation compliance can vary individually based on factors such as crops and region. USDA economist Roger Klassen explains.
Even though at a national level, the compliance incentives were pretty similar under the 2014 Act as what we estimated they would have been under the 2008 Act, we also found that that result masked a lot of variation on individual farms. There were a lot of farms where the change in the programs that underlie compliance would have resulted in an increase in compliance incentives. Farmers would have more payments that are tied to compliance. On the other hand, there were a lot of farms where compliance incentives that we estimate are lower. Where compliance incentives tend to be lower is on farms that had large direct payments where crop insurance subsidies are relatively low. In the heart of the Corn Belt, where yields are high and production is steady, those are places where you're probably seeing compliance incentives decline. In the Northern Plains, the direct payments were perhaps not as high, but crop insurance premium subsidies are higher because production is more variable.
USDA economist Roger Klassen. Specialty Crop News brought to you by the Almond Board of California. Find them online at almonds.com. In this week's Almond Update, Almond Board President and CEO Richard Waycott gives us an update on the July position report.
Perfect. All right, so we wanted to talk today about the July report that came out. Can you give us a general recap of what the report said?
Yes, well, really had a banner year in the 2016-2017 crop year, breaking all-time record in terms of the size of the crop as well as shipments. So the crop came in at 2,001.36 million pounds, which is up about 13% over the prior year. And the shipments for the first time ever went over 2 billion pounds, to actually 2,100 million pounds, which is about 16% over the prior year. So all in all, a record-breaking year.
And we talked a little bit when we talked a few weeks ago about some of the things that led to this giant crop this year. Part of that being that we had more water, right?
Well, yeah, I think we've seen that, you know, the drought had its impact in terms of holding yields down below where they had been in an environment where we were expanding our acreage at the same time. So we had a few years where crops really weren't growing, but this last year with decent pollination and adequate water supply, we were able to produce this record-breaking crop.
All right, so all around this is good news for producers?
Yeah, it's great news that we're being able to grow and be able to satisfy more worldwide demand. We think that the almond industry here in California, the way it's approaching and improving constantly its agricultural and environmental practices, food safety, et cetera, have positioned almonds because of the nutritional benefits and because of the way we grow the crop is a very long-term agricultural activity here in California that we don't see really slowing down. It's a worldwide demand is continuing to grow, new consumers getting to know almonds, new product introductions also at a record pace with almond ingredients. So it looks like a good and bright future for the industry.
All right, that all sums it up in a nutshell, pardon the pun. But do you have anything else that you wanted to add in there, Richard?
Well, that we're now going into our harvesting phase for the 17-18 crop year. And the objective estimate that the USDA published last month shows that we'll be, again, increasing about 5% up to 2.250 billion pounds, so about a 5% increase over this year. So back-to-back years of growth, and we expect our shipments and sales to accompany that growth as they did this year.
Almond Board President and CEO Richard Wacont. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs, reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Continuing your agriculture news now. In the face of tough financial conditions, farmers are doing what they can to cut expenses. Gary Crawford has this report.
When commodity prices are low, when farmers' margins are squeezed into the negative, most producers are going to do what they can to cut expenses. And the Agriculture Department's reporting that for 2016, that's exactly what they did. Some of it by conscious choice, some just because prices for things were lower. USDA Outlook Board Chairman Seth Meyer told us nationally, total farm production spending dropped in 2016 for both crop farms and livestock operations.
The crop farms, you know, a little under 2% decline versus livestock down almost 7% in terms of their overall expenditures. You've got lower feed costs, and that's what's helping to contribute to a bigger decline in expenditures in livestock.
In actual numbers, Crop Farm's total production spending last year, $177 billion, biggest chunk of that going for land rental at almost $25 billion. Paying workers was just below that at about $24.5 billion. Now, for livestock operations, expenditures were just slightly less than $170 billion, and of course, feed, $53 billion of that, or about a third of total expenses. Now, for some specific categories in general, farmers did spend more on seeds and farm chemicals,
but lots of other things in those expenses down.
For example, U.S. farmers cut spending on new equipment.
Tractors and machinery equipment is one of the easiest places for you to make an adjustment on your budget. It's not because the machinery is necessarily that much cheaper. It's because folks are saying, this is one spot in my budget I can make a big adjustment.
And Meyer says farmers also cut spending on fuel for those pieces of equipment.
And I don't think it's necessarily because farmers are using all that much less fuel, obviously, but you get a little bit lower gasoline and diesel prices, and that helps contribute to lower expenditures.
Farmers last year spent 7.5% less than the year before on diesel, 8.7% less for gasoline. And here's a big one for crop producers. Cropland rents began to come down.
You know, you talk about cropland rents being down at the U.S. about 5.5%. And you look through the states, and that's pretty consistent. You know, sometimes you think geographically things are different. But Iowa's down about 6%. California's down about 6%.
So take all of this together, and farmers did cut expenses last year in the face of lower commodity prices and falling incomes. But Texas A&M economist Dr. Joe Outlaw told lawmakers recently that in the university survey of U.S. crop producers,
they all indicated there's nothing else left to cut.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Well, in today's livestock news, the official North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, renegotiations began yesterday in Washington, D.C. National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Director of International Trade and Market Access, Kent Backus, discusses the process.
We expect there to be several more rounds of negotiations before the end of the year. And really, this first round is going to be about testing the waters and trying to set the parameters. You know, we're going to have a lot of experts on the U.S. side. We'll have a lot of our negotiators. Their teams will be pretty full, so we'll have people covering all areas of the economy. It'll be rooms full of lawyers, and, you know, really they're going to focus on each individual segment at a time. I think this week is really going to be about setting the stage, about what they want to accomplish, what are some of the things that they can go ahead and check off the list, and then what are the sensitive items that they're going to have to probably finish later on in the year. So I think that's really what they're going to focus on and try to move as much of that agenda in the next few weeks as possible.
And Backus looks at a time frame involved for these discussions.
Well, quite frankly, you know, I think there's a lot of optimism about moving the negotiations as quickly as possible. But realistically, we're probably looking at several months here. I know that there's a goal of trying to conclude the negotiations by the end of the year. At least that's some of the goals of folks in the industry. That's certainly what we would like to see. But just given the overall size of NAFTA, the fact that you have industries today that didn't exist when NAFTA was first negotiated, there's a lot of ground they got to cover, and there's also a lot of issues that they're going to have to discuss. So I think that, you know, we would be optimistic to think this will conclude by the end of the year, but realistically, it's going to take several months. Our message has been pretty clear to the administration from the beginning, and that really is do no harm. Leave the U.S. beef and cattle sectors. Leave all of the sectors that impact the cattle industry alone, because we've really benefited from NAFTA. And because of NAFTA, we've seen our exports to both Canada and Mexico average about $1 billion annually.
Again, that was NCBA's Kent Backus. And with the NAFTA renegotiations underway, the National Pork Producers Council is just one of the many ag groups weighing in on the topic. NPPC is urging the administration to maintain a zero tariff rate on pork traded in North America. NPPC President Kim Mashoff said Canada and Mexico are top export markets for our pork, so obviously we don't want any disruption in our exports to those countries. Like many other ag groups, NPPC wants to reemphasize to the administration what a boon NAFTA has been for American agriculture. The original agreement first went into effect on January 1 of 1994, and since then, U.S. trade north and south of the border has more than tripled. Trade with Canada and Mexico has grown more rapidly than U.S. trade with the rest of the world. Canada is the number 2 overall market for American ag products. Mexico is number 3. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Evergreiner is next.
Beef, still the most popular meat on the American dinner plate. Maybe that's because we raise more cows in America than any other country. We also export more beef than anybody. The cattle industry is one of the largest segments of American agriculture, so it's safe to assume that that big hunk of pot roast or that T-bone steak just off the grill staring you in the face came from a Texas ranch or a Nebraska feedlot. Well, don't bet on it. We export a lot of beef, but we import a lot, too. We import beef from Australia. We also import beef from Argentina, Brazil, Canada, and Mexico, so there's no guarantee where that hunk of beef came from. It's how it's raised and processed that makes a difference in the taste, not where. But we'd all be happier if we knew it came from a Texas ranch. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Griner, Agnet West.
Cindy Zimmerman has today's interview segment. Here's Cindy.
Phil Borjak has a family farm in Nokomis, Illinois, where he raises hogs, corn, soybeans, and wheat. He also serves on the board of directors for the National Pork Producers Council and the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. Jamie Johansson caught up with Phil at the 2017 World Pork Expo in Des Moines, where she talked to him about how technology has changed his family farm in his lifetime.
Phil, take me through your operation. You obviously are a pork producer. Take me through the history of pork in your family and kind of how you got involved.
Well, my wife, Karen, we have three children, three adult children. We actually live on the farm that I was born at. My parents moved to the farm that we live at today the year before I was born, and so we've been in the same location now for 60 years. We started as an outside hog operation where we couldn't control the environment for our animals, and today then we have 9,000 sows, work with 18 different grower partners on raising those pigs to market, provide a nutritious, high-value product then for our consumer.
Well, you already talked a little bit about how your pigs are raised differently and the climate-controlled buildings versus pasture raised. Take me through some of the other technologies that you have seen change in your lifetime on the farm.
It's been tremendous. When I started with my dad, I'm very tall. I'm 6'4" with long legs. And I joke because I got my long legs for pulling my feet up out of the mud because that's how we raised our pigs, is in the mud. And they had to deal with that, and we had to deal with that. And we couldn't control the environment. We had to depend on bedding, and the pig had to be able to create its own warmth in the winter and its coolness in the summer. So today we moved to facilities that we can control their environment. A pig today has an extreme temperature of maybe 20 degrees from the winter to the summer. And the summer is really where we get the upper end of that range. And so we're just able to control and make a more environmentally friendly place for that pig to be raised and create food for us.
We talk a lot about smart technology in our daily lives, whether it's your smart phone, your smart home, smart cars. We are now more and more talking about smart farming, smart agriculture. And I'm going to guess that even though you're here in Des Moines at the World Pork Expo, you know what's going on in your barns, even though you're not there, because of smart technology.
I can get on my smartphone right now, and actually I've got 6 barns that I can tell you what the temperature is on each one of them, how long the fans have been running, if it's wintertime, tell you how long the heater ran, and what kind of environment those pigs are existing right now. And that, you know, with Wi-Fi and broadband in out in the countryside, we're able to do that and adapt those technologies that other industries have had for a long time. Along with that, then, we use PCAI as a new technology that's came along, that we can take a single female or single male and spread that semen over more sows, so that we end up with more of a uniform product then to deliver to our harvesters.
Beyond just the technology used in the barns, what about sustainability? Take me through how you're farming more sustainable today versus the childhood farm you grew up on.
Well, when we started, we would just take a manure spreader out and spread the manure on the cornfield. And it was still nutrition for our corn for the next year. But today, we're able to inject that manure right into the soil. We use GPS then and flow meters to be able to tell us exactly how many gallons we're getting on per acre. And then we use the testing then to analyze that product then so that we know how much N, P, and K we're actually putting on that farm, and that we don't get our acres overbalanced and put on too many nutrients. But then we know how to balance it then to get the right amount of nutrients in for our next corn crop.
More and more today, we're talking about the lack of farmers coming back to the farm, whether it's a pork industry or beef or crop or anywhere in between. Take me through how you are instilling this livelihood in your children so that they will, too, want to be able to come back to the farm and farm even more sustainably using even more technology in the future.
And that's the exciting part of this business, that is we're able to change so rapidly. When my dad did it, it was backbreaking work. We carried all the feed. We just weren't set up. And today now, that a lot of that backbreaking work now is done by machine, and delivers the feed to each one of the animals, and then we can use that technology and the time that's created from that technology to actually observe our animals and meet their needs versus just feeding them. And so it's just changed the way we do things dramatically. It's a much less physically demanding job than what it used to be, but it's more mentally. We're able to bring in young people that understand technology into our business, where before they saw it as backbreaking work, and it's not that way anymore.
And I understand that you are also on the National Pork Producers Council board.
Yes, I've been now just starting my fourth year on that, and the Pork Council then actually works with legislative and trade issues, and so that's broadened my view of the world, and I've learned so much by having that opportunity.
And through that opportunity, you are now part of sitting on the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers, or USFRA, board. Take me through the importance of these organizations working together to communicate what's going on in Washington to the producer and vice versa.
We discovered this, I'm going to say 15 years ago, because I've been involved with the association for a long time, that we have spent so much time at home doing our job, that what we saw as our job inside of our white buildings, and we forgot that not everybody knew what we were doing. And so the U.S. Farmer Ranch Alliance, Pork Council, Pork Board, State Association now, over the last 10 years, have started to help us inform the consumer and legislators then of what we actually do and how we take care of our animals. They can't see it today because of biosecurity reasons, and they live in cities, so they don't see what we do every day. And so using smart farm technology, using several things that U.S. Farm Ranch Alliance is doing, we're showing the inside of our facilities that the consumer and the public's never had an opportunity to see for many years.
As we wrap up our conversation, what would be the one take-home message that you would want a consumer to know about you, to know about your family, to know about the pigs that leave your farm?
It's not only me, but the people I work with. And that is the passion that they do their daily work. They love what they do. They love the animals they work with. And you spend 5 minutes with any of our staff, you'll find out just how much they truly do care about the animals that they care of, and how well they want to do that job and make that animal just as comfortable as possible, so that it then can be used.
As Phil mentioned in the conversation, you can take a virtual tour of Borgic Farms online and in 360 with a VR viewer or headset. Just go to fooddialogues.com/programs/videos.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft, lower hourly fuel costs, reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Hey, we're out of time, Mike. Hey, thanks for your call. Gotta go. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Soil Talk.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. Brought to you by NRCS and this radio station.
This is Farm City News Day. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation anytime you want, all on our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought and protect soil and water resources. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today.
Authorities battling wildfires are contending with a relatively new nuisance, an increasing number of unauthorized drones.
They are generally flying in the same airspace that our air tankers are dropping fire retardant, helicopters are dropping water, and other aerial firefighting aircraft are operating. This causes the risk of a mid-air collision or for one of our pilots to become distracted by the presence of an unauthorized drone and crash.
That was the U.S. Forest Service's Jennifer Jones, who works with the National Interagency Fire Center.
Last year, we had about 40 documented instances of members of the public flying drones over or near wildfires. That was twice as many as the year before.
And she adds, this year's numbers are heading in the same direction.
We've had 24 documented instances of members of the public flying unauthorized drones over or near wildfires. And that has caused us to temporarily suspend aerial firefighting on 19 occasions. And those incursions have occurred in 11 states.
One of those states is Arizona. At the end of June, authorities there arrested a man on charges of hampering firefighting efforts by flying an unmanned drone in restricted airspace over an active wildfire.
We had some Type 1 helicopters available, and we were doing bucket drops on some of those hot spots around those houses further up the drainage. We got a call on the radio that there was a drone intrusion. Somebody had spotted a drone. That went to the air attack platform that, you know, manages all the airspace above a wildland fire.
That was Todd Abel, Operations Section Chief of the Central Arizona Fire and Medical Authority, who says the protocol is for all firefighting aircraft to be grounded until the area is cleared.
All those aircraft left. So what that did is some of those fires, that got that firework got pushed down towards some of those structures. We had to, you know, rearrange some resources and move some people around. In the meantime, obviously that fire was still kind of growing by some of those structures.
The Forest Service's Jones puts it another way.
That's really the same thing as a member of the public standing in front of a fire engine to prevent them from getting to a fire, and most people would never do that.
Because the problem is so serious, she says the penalties can be severe.
So what we say generally is that individuals that are caught flying an unauthorized drone over or near a wildfire can be subject to penalties of up to $20,000 and potentially criminal prosecution.
People can consult with local authorities or check several different apps to find out which areas have wildfire flight restrictions. But there is even a simpler way.
It's really just easiest to say, you know, if they see fire or smoke, don't go near it.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.